Hey,
we're the few.
You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
Come to Foo Bar on December 17th for our 5th annual Christmas Bash and Food Drive to see us, along with Noesis, Forgetting January, The Failures, and our good friends from Minneapolis, Vaudeville.
Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and tickets are only $7.
Be sure to bring canned food or other non-perishable food items for donation to the St. Louis Area Food Bank so we can help those less fortunate have a better holiday season.
All tickets purchased in advance will be entered to win 4 tickets to see Star Wars Rogue One on us.
The winner will be announced at the end of the night.
Also, if you haven't picked up our new record, Sleep Tight When You Wake Up Will Be Gone, grab your physical copy from us on the 17th or download digitally anytime.
Now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here with Rock Paper Podcast. Hey, quick reminder, if anybody hasn't checked it out, I put together this playlist on Spotify called the Rock Paper Podcast Favorites. All kinds of local music and guests from the show. About 2 or 3 songs from everybody I could find on there. So head over to Spotify, check it out, find some new great music. Also, want to tell you about my friends over at The Gaslight. Check them out over on the hill, gaslightstl.com, and go over there and book yourself a recording session. It's a beautiful studio here in town, attached to a bar. It's a really unique experience. You can come in, you can record, or you can listen to one of your favorite bands recording their record, and just have a lot of fun over there. So again, gaslightstl.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and get involved. Check out their full listing of upcoming events on the website. Also want to tell you about my friends over at Music Record Shop. Find them over there on Washington Avenue, right next to KDHX, brand new location. They got a lot of great stuff going on. Check it out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, musicrecordshop.com. A lot of great live in-stores on the weekends. On Fridays, all new music happy hour, all new records in-store. And they got a great local selection. You can get in there, check that out. And if you want your own records on the shelf, hit them up about that, see how you make that happen. And then check it all out. Shop online 24/7 at musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
This is Tony Barbata. You're listening to the Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
You can count on it every time you're with me, babe. I will keep you warm and safe with me. I will make you see the sky is my guitar, and I'll play in your backyard. Just give it time. The world ain't full of nothing. I will make you mine. I will give you a good something. A good something. I live, the ceiling's full. stop me, babe. Painting all the walls and feeling 10 foot tall and naked. Just give it time. The world I will make you mine. I will give you a good something. A good something.
Hey everybody, Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, hanging out with Tony Barbata. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're down here in your drum studio.
Yeah, my basement, aka St. Louis Drum Lab.
This is nice, man. Very cool. I appreciate you having me over, and I was actually thinking a lot, like, on the way over and booking this. Like, we've kind of known each other a while, and a lot of the shows is a good excuse for me to get to hang out outside of a show or the bar scene kind of thing.
And we don't have to, like, scream in someone's face.
Right. Yeah. Where we can actually have a nice conversation. Yeah. And but I was trying to think, like, when we first met, and I was like, I know I've been seeing you play for quite a while. But I don't know exactly, I couldn't pinpoint when the first time I saw you play.
I'm not sure when we actually met for the first time. I would imagine it was probably at the Oyster Bar.
Yeah.
If I had to
That's probably a fair,
but
fair
assumption. I've been playing around town for a lot of years, I guess, at this point. I'm 36, and I started playing around town when I was like 18, so...
Right.
Been in and out of a lot of bands and a lot of venues. But I think, yeah, most recently in the last few years, probably the Oyster Bar.
Sure.
With Big Mike or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I follow a lot of, like, I just, I don't know, maybe 10 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
Probably in that area. Been like really getting big into the music scene,
sure.
Like, and it's even progressed more since doing this show and stuff. The addiction's grown even stronger.
Sure.
So, but yeah, so I've been around, you know, going to a lot of shows and stuff for probably the last 10 years, I'd say. And
yeah,
so I'm sure we've crossed paths several times before we really started to, you know, get to know who each other were,
sure.
And stuff. So
yeah.
But yeah, so you, like I said, you've been seen playing gigs with
Big Mike. You are also Sleepy Rubies.
Correct.
And John Henry.
John Henry.
So
and anyone else who cares to throw some dollars at me to play some some drums.
All right.
Yeah.
But yeah, that like saying Oyster Bar, it's and also you'll be playing there coming up for what, December 21st?
21st for Sean Cannon, yeah. Voodoo Players. That'll be my first Voodoo Players gig.
Yeah.
It took me 3 years to get on the gig. No, yeah. It's cool. I feel like I haven't been around that scene as much, maybe in the last year and some change, just because two little ones and mm-hmm. and it's just, you know, it's not like that, that is in my past, and it's just like I can't, man, on Wednesday night, I'm like, there have been so many afternoons where I'm like, I'm fucking go see the Voodoo Players tribute tonight, see what they're doing. And by the time I'm done with teaching my last drum lesson at like 8:15, 8:30, I'm like, I'm fucking done.
All right, yeah,
I'm
sure.
Done. I'm ready to sit on the couch and try and like catch up with my wife for 20 minutes before she goes to bed.
All right.
But as my kids get older too, I see a little bit of a light at the end of that tunnel a little bit where I can, you know, sneak out every once in a while and they're getting a little bit older. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to doing that. That'll be my first time doing that. We're doing the Zeppelin tribute,
which yeah.
I'm excited about, and I usually get nervous about playing, but something about doing Bonham like makes me a little nervous.
Yeah,
mostly because I know if there's other fucking drummers there, if I don't play the triplet fills, they're gonna be standing in the back. But no, it's cool. I'm happy to do it. I'm super psyched. Sean asked me to do it. We ran into each other at Jim Peters' birthday party, and he's like, "Man, I want to get you on one of these." And he's like, "Well, we've already done so many that they're like repeating them, and it doesn't make sense to bring a new player in when you're repeating, you know, a book of songs, unless somebody like fucking dies or something." But so he asked me what I, you know, he's like, whatever you want to do. And he's like, I'd really love to do a Zeppelin tribute. I've had a lot of requests for that, and I've just been kind of putting it off. I was like, let's do it.
Yeah, man.
So he got Eric Lysett, and I don't know if there's anybody covering the keys parts, but we should be getting together here in the next week or so and hammering out 25 Zeppelin tunes. Yeah,
right.
So
yeah, looking forward to that. I was going to say, I don't think you have to worry about the other drummers in the house. It's Sean's the one, like, it's crazy watching him, like, you know, as leading the band. Mm-hmm. But, like, if anybody does something, hits the wrong note or whatever, you know, that kind of thing, like, it's funny to watch how fast his head turns around.
Right,
like,
he notices,
you know,
yeah.
He's got an amazing ear for it all. And like,
man, the way that he learns songs every week for that thing is, as a player, it does incredible things to you to just be able to learn songs that fast. There have definitely been points in my career where I'm always having to learn songs because I do a few church gigs, so it's always like a handful of new songs every week that I have to kind of learn very quickly, but they're all kind of in the same idiom of music to a certain degree. But when you're learning 20 new songs, 25 new songs a week, your ears are sharp, man.
Sure.
He's his ears are super sharp.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I've been I was coming on almost a year. I've been working at Oyster Bar now, and mm-hmm. then like I was working Thursdays for a while, and I got on Wednesdays, and I'm like, for a long time I always wanted to go down there and be a part of these Wednesday nights, but it was just, again, being on Wentzville and everything else, like it got difficult to make it out during the week and everything. But now that I'm working there, it's even better of an excuse. I can get paid to be there now. And but yeah, man, I'm so glad I'm there on Wednesday nights and seeing the show, because it's just it's an incredible show every week, and regardless of who they're playing and mm-hmm. and stuff. But and he's got some of the best players the city has to offer every week, so it's just
it's a lot very of fun. Cool, man. Yeah, so, and I make it sound like I never go out, but I get to, you know, every once in a while and get down there and catch a set. It's just dangerous.
Yeah.
The off the Broadway area. Hi. Hey.
Okay. Am I interrupting?
You are. We're recording. Oh, I'm so this sorry. Is my wife, Andrea.
Hello.
Hi. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm leaving. The kids are asleep.
Okay.
I have to go get St. Nick shit.
Sweet.
And I'm going to get your nephew's birthday.
Man, fuck those kids.
I love your nephews.
I was talking about our kids.
Oh, no.
What is St. Nick bringing them?
I didn't want to get him just candy. I was trying to get, like, I don't know, some stickers or something. I don't know.
All right.
I'll figure it out. I'm going to go to Walgreens. They have everything.
They have everything.
Come home with Snuggies.
Right.
Bye.
Bye.
St. Nick shit. That's yeah. Funny. Yeah, I don't know. But anyway,
sorry. That's what happens when you have kids. They
sure.
They pretty much just fucking ruin everything. Even when they're sleeping, they just ruin everything. Sean Cannon.
Yeah, I just had a great time hanging with those guys, talking about the woodshed and stuff.
Yeah, man, that sounds super cool.
Yeah, it's those videos they've been putting out are amazing. But
Sean asked me. He goes, "Would you want to if who's playing it? Mike's? It's Mike playing drums on that
tonight?
No, or? the usually the woodshed."
Oh, Mike is in the Voodoo Players band.
He's like, if Mike's not available, or would you be interested? He's telling me that. I was like, dude, that sounds totally bitch.
Right. Yeah, they have the house band, but then they invite, like, two other bands to play against each other for the games, mm-hmm. and they also play a live performance. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Andy Coco has been his bass player. And,
yeah, it was awesome.
He's got sometimes he had keys and things and stuff, so... Couple different guys that have been sitting in with him on those nights, but I think it's a really cool thing they're doing. I'm excited to see where that goes, but I did want to talk about, because I thought it was funny, you got to be probably at least not many of them, but one of the only guys to play Lou Fest 2 days in a row.
Oh, twice in the same with two different acts.
yeah. And then show up for a third day, too.
I did. Yeah, I did show up for a third day. So, I didn't get the... I thought it was the third day. I thought they were like... I was like, when is my fucking drum solo? And they're like, third day.
Yeah.
So, I went on foot. That was awesome, man. That was... however that transpired, I mean, there's already a connection, obviously, between John Henry... and Sleepy Rubies, and I've been playing in John's band for, I don't know, I guess 2.5 years, and then, the Rubies are still, God, it's not even a year old, that's what's crazy, but it all kind of happened at once, and I don't think that I realized it right away. John was like, dude, you're going to play twice, and I was like, oh, I guess I am. But that was cool, man. It was super fun, and we were on the same stage and, you know, the same sound crew, and it was awesome. But it was still, like, two different experiences.
Sure.
With the Rubies, I sort of fucked myself. I must have said John Henry's name too many times, because now he's texting me.
Uh-oh.
I'm not going to send him dick pics right now. with the Sleepy Rubies, as the date was approaching, Big Mike Aguirre called me or texted me, whatever, corresponded with me through some sort of technology, and asked if I could do a blues festival in, like, Murfreesboro, Illinois that day. And I was like, well, what time? And it was like just enough time that I could play the Rubies set and go, and I wanted to make sure that I was back for Chris Stapleton. And I took the gig, but it was like 6 weeks, 8 weeks out, and I was just like, yeah, because it was a cool gig, because it was Mike and Andy Coco and Nathan Hershey were on it, and I love those guys. I'm always happy to play with them, and it was a nice, it paid well. So it was kind of like, well... I'll go do it. I knew that there would be acts that I'd want to see that day at Lou Fest, but as you heard, we got to buy St. Nick shit and other assorted things from Walgreens for the kids. so I took the gig, and then as it approached, I was like, damn, why did I think I took it before they announced the lineup. So then when I looked at the lineup for that day and saw some of the bands I was going to be missing, I was like, fuck.
Right.
But I did make it back for Stapleton the first night, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I got a sitter. She brought the kids to see Sleepy Rubies. Sleepy Rubies have actually rehearsed here. And since it was summer, we let the kids just kind of hang out, and they sit downstairs and whatever. Which, you know, having children around, Emily and Allie, the constant stream of dick and fart jokes. And they're, you know, it's kind of like, they don't have, they're like, oh, I'm sorry. And I'm like, I don't care. They hear it when, if you're here or not, they're going to hear it. Maybe not as, it's not as scatological when Emily and Allie aren't here. But, so my wife brought them to see us the first day at Lou Fest, and then I went and played Mike's thing. And then I got back, and we had this whole thing, like, planned out. My mom came and to watch the kids, and we were going to Uber back to the park, and then we were going to see Stapleton and meet some friends there and act like we didn't have kids for a couple hours and then Uber home because we're not that far from Forest Park. And it was, like, our Uber driver's first day. And it was his car reeked of cologne. It was he didn't know where he was going. He almost killed us. I ended up, like, as soon as we were in Forest Park, I go, this is fine.
Right.
And Andrea's kind of elbowing me. She's like, well, I don't think we're close to the stage. She's like, oh, I just got to get out of this dude's car. And we ended up, like, walking a half mile to the gate. But she didn't give a shit. She'd been with the kids all day and was just, like, you know, happy to get out of the house. We love our kids, but, you know, she stays home with them. And I'm here all the time because I work from our home. So we're just kind of all on top of each other.
Right.
So we got there finally and get in. And we probably hung out for about 8 songs, heard some of the hits. And I was just like, it all kind of hit me at once. I was like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
And I think we Ubered home and got our car and we got something to eat. And then the next day playing with John Henry was just got up and did it all over again. And all the security guys at the gate were kind of like, right by the stage, were like, what are you doing back here?
Yeah.
You know, and so it was fun. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then John Henry set, it was great. It was muddy.
Oh, yeah, man.
As hell.
Yeah, my experience, I don't know. I think I worked Friday or something, late Friday, and then I went there Saturday, Sunday, right, for Lou Fest this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, like, I got there early. I had to wake up early and drive an hour to Forest Park, and then I got there to see Sleepy Rubies open up, and I was trying to make it all night. I went to the car, tried to take a nap before Chris Stapleton.
Mm-hmm.
And things, but I just, by the time I got to that point, I'm like, forget it, I'm just gonna go home. And like,
yeah, I kind of did the same thing Sunday. I was we did John Henry's set, and I hung out for a little bit, and I walked around, and I drank some free beer and listened to a few bands, and then I was like, alright, I'm gonna just go home for a little bit and come back for who's the headliner? Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
And
she was
she
was somewhere in.
Yeah, and then who's the headliner the second night?
LCD Sound System.
Which was a band that I'd always kind of known of but didn't know very well. But then after talking to people, they're like, you should have come back. But by the time I got out of the park, I was like, holy fuck, that was terrible. And I got home and just crashed out. That was a long weekend and a lot of sun. And
yeah,
it was fun though. It was great. And then, yeah. And then that Monday morning I got up and I went for a run, and I run Forest Park all the time. So I ran back by the gate and I took an obnoxious selfie of me sweating and this day three, where is everybody? And I'm sure there's probably like a crew worker tearing it down in the background, like giving me the bird or something. Like, fucking asshole.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a really great experience. That was a kind of a a cap to like a good summer, because that was in September, right?
Yeah.
That was just kind of put the cap on the whole thing. It was great.
Yeah, definitely. I
really enjoyed it.
Well, you can see Tony with both of those bands again. We have Sleep Ruby's date coming up December 29th at Off Broadway.
Yep.
With Salisbury,
yep.
Which is Eric's band we mentioned. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that. There might be some sort of supergroup situation at the end of the night, supposedly. Yeah. Because there's some overlap in that band. Mark Hochberg plays violin in the Rubies and then plays bass in Eric's band. I was lucky enough last year, Bennett wasn't available, and Eric asked me to do a show with him. That was super fun. I really enjoyed the music and loved playing with those guys and just hanging with them. So that should be a really fun show. I know that we've talked about trying to figure out a couple of songs that we could get Eric up on.
Yeah.
And do like everybody sort of super group, super jam.
When it's what they said, what I read online, there's going to be some new material for the night too, some new songs or something.
Yeah.
Something along those
lines.
We
have a couple of, they're actually both, we have a couple of songs that we did at Lou Fest but are not on the record. One they did just acoustic, the two of them, they opened our set with, called Big Mountain. And then the other one, oh shit, you hit me cold. it'll come to me.
Yeah.
And then another new one that we actually did at Lou Fest that we wrote the Wednesday before, that like they came up with right before rehearsal, and they're like, hey, what do you guys think of this? And we're like, we think we should play that shit.
Yeah.
That's sort of the thing with them is, you know, they've done a bunch of shows since Lou Fest with just Emily and Allie.
Right.
And I'm totally fine with that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm happy to just be a part of it, but I also understand that my role in that band is, like, their songs and their songwriting and their singing is, like, that's, we're just the icing on the cake. You know what I mean? When it's, like, when the it's more when the time allows, because they've gotten on with a bunch of touring acts at, like, Off-Broadway opening. And for time's sake, it's much easier to just throw the two of them up there, and even if Jim Peters is with them, and just have them go. They can get on and off quick. And if it's an acoustic type show, you want to put a full band in front of a headline, in front of an acoustic headliner. So, but yeah. Anyhow, it's cool because it's the two newer ones are ones that were kind of the songs on the record they wrote, and then they brought the players in and said, okay, here's the songs and what do you think it needs? And there was a lot of, you know, John Henry produced it. And then Jason McIntyre at Sawhorse is, who will always tell you that he's not a producer, but is the best, one of the best producers I know. He's a great engineer, but he also knows what he'll throw his two cents in when it really counts. And he had a lot of great input on that record. And we actually did drums last, which is not usually, you know, kind of backwards, but it's, you know, it's so acoustic and just broken down type stuff that it just lent itself to that. And we just kind of went, okay, what can I do really simple in the background? But the new songs are not necessarily written with the full band in mind, but everybody's starting to really get a lot more comfortable with their role in the band and in the songs. So they're a little bit more, they're not as, like, minimal. It's, everything is with them is always going to be really minimal,
right.
But it's, you know, a little bit more like full drum set. I'm kind of playing with sticks and not just brushes and shakers and stuff. And even some of the stuff on the record live has evolved to be a little bit, not really heavier, but just a little bit more in that direction. So that's been really fun because it's been, even the stuff on the record, it still sounds pretty much like it does on the record. It's just a little bit more lively.
Right.
Live. I have incredible command of the English language. I know that you're impressed. And then,
well, John, you, it seems, I guess that's where you get to more kind of rock out a little bit.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, John's stuff is super fun because it's just rocking, straight ahead kind of stuff. And a lot of his stuff was when I first started in the band, he's like, this is how I want you to play it. And some of it, he's kind of like, I want something sort of like this, and I kind of can put my own thing on it. And then with the record, Dark City, Dark Country, you know, he and Dave Beeman produced that, and when we did drums, that was super fun doing that at Native Sound, and just spending several days in there. And I feel like it was fun. I got to put my two cents in, and everybody was happy with the way that the drums turned out on that album, because John's a good drummer, and you know, it suits him, it serves him well, because he can write the song and, you know, kind of play it in a garage band and then play drums along with it, or lay a simple drum track down for him to get his ideas out. And sometimes that's great for me, because it's like, here's this, can you play this? And like, yes, I can. But sometimes it's just a loose idea. And Dave Beeman's a great drummer too, great ideas. So it was fun sort of collaborating with those guys. It was arduous at times, just because be like, okay, we're going to do this song. Just do your thing. And I'd do a whole take. And then Dave would be like, yeah, that was really great. Try this on the verse. And then do a whole other take with a different verse part. And then, oh, what did you think? Okay, what did you think? John, what do you think? And then, so we'd end up doing 10 takes just to get the part nailed down. But it was just fun collaborating with those guys. And I love the way that record turned out as well. I'm really proud to be a part of both of those things, and proud of how they sound.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, both. That was another kind of a nice tie-in together for both groups. The dual CD release party.
The almost dual CD release. I'm not supposed to talk about that. Sorry, John. So John's record wasn't actually ready for the CD release.
Yeah.
It was ready shortly thereafter, but right. It was not. It's just fun to give John a hard time. But, yeah, that was fun. It's kind of like, you know, it's a good sort of family vibe. Everybody there, you know, trusts each other. And, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yes, both, that was just neat. Both groups putting out new material and stuff. And so there's, if you haven't picked up those, there's the Sleepy Ruby's EP and John Henry's Dark City, Dark Country. Available now. Mm-hmm. And we're streaming on Spotify and things, all those all over the place digitally. So, pick up physical copies at the shows and things. And
yeah.
So
I think Emily has copies at Friendly's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's slanging copies at Friendly's, according to the Sleepy Ruby's Facebook page.
Right.
It's great.
Yeah.
Have a beer and a CD.
Yeah. And so we got John Henry date.
February 4th. That's the Fade to Black video release. John has given me permission to divulge as much as I know about it. I know that it will involve the band all being naked, and it'll involve a lot of olive oil. And I don't actually know what the fuck the video is going to look like.
All right,
I think it's. But I did ask John. I was like, "Can I?" So you want me to tell him what his body's like? Go ahead. No, but the release will be February 4th at Off Broadway, and that'll be, you know. It's always fun playing with those guys. We just did the Springsteen, Bob Seger tribute the day after Thanksgiving. And is that the day after Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Or the Saturday after? Somewhere. I don't remember. But that was, you know, that was super fun. It's always great playing with those guys. They're all incredible players. And they all, you know, everybody plays in different bands. And that I've often thought of starting my own podcast and just readings, some of the various group text messages that I have on my phone. And that would be one of them, but it would have to be like a video podcast so you could see all of the animation and pictures that go back and forth. It's maybe not the most appropriate thing to share right now, but no, I really do love those guys. And I love playing with them, and there's a lot of respect in that band.
Definitely.
And it makes it feel, you know, like family. If you ask any of the other rest, I'd be like, fuck Tony, he's an asshole. So I'm trying to get in good graces with him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, this will do it. So
yeah.
They're all big fans of the Rock Paper Podcast, so
good. Good. So they should be.
Yeah. Yeah, John's been on the show, and mm-hmm. of course Emily and Ali for about 15 minutes, I think they sat in on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Been working. They had to get to, I think it was Sleepy Ruby's rehearsal.
That's right.
For Lufest. That's right. So yeah. So we I was late, and they had a time schedule, so I only got to hang with them for a little mm-hmm. short while. But
man, I don't know anyone sweeter and more disgusting than the two of them. It's right. Really like they can hang with any dude with the gutter talk and like beyond like you. Oh,
right.
Man, it's really incredible. It's really like a sight to behold. Like I feel like everyone should see it before they die. It's like you should see Yellowstone. You should see, you know, Paris, and you should hear the dick jokes that come out of Emily Wallace's mouth.
Right.
It's really, yeah. They're, they're, and all joking aside, and I mean, they are disgusting, but it's crazy playing with them, and when they open their mouths and sing, and the way their voices blend, I mean, it's like a fucking freight train. It's really crazy. Yeah. I mean, you've experienced it. It's nuts. That really is like a force of nature. Maybe that's the thing that everybody should see before they die.
Especially in a room like off Broadway and stuff where, you know, you get that true listening experience and stuff. I mean, obviously Lou Fest was cool, but like when you can kind of get everybody quiet, and I mean, sometimes it's not as easy as said, but when you get everybody quiet in that room and you can hear their voices cut through everything, and it's just like, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Oh, man, when they go into any of the a cappella sections of the songs, it's like, in between words, while they're, like, breathing, you can hear a pin drop.
Sure.
People are just captivated by them. I'm just kind of, like, along for the ride. I'm just happy to be there. I like the guys in that band a lot. Jim Peters is a good friend of mine. Mark teaches my daughter violin, you know. So it's a big fucking love fest all the time, Shane.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, music, dude, bands are always a love fest. Oh, Jesus. Maybe not.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to kind of, like I said, I don't know a whole lot of the of the history and stuff, so that's kind of why I like to kind of cover some of the backstory stuff for you too. You said something maybe off mic, like five or six, you started drumming or something like that?
I was 9 or 10,
oh, nine
actually.
Or 10? Okay.
I started kind of playing snare drum. I think I started on clarinet in fourth grade because I just wanted to fucking play something, and I nagged my parents, and we had a clarinet because my sister played. And I think as I was like putting it away one day after band in fourth grade, I had it like taken apart and I was drumming with the two halves, and the band director was probably like, okay, we should let this kid fucking play drums since this is ridiculous. I kind of played snare drum, and then we moved to St. Peter's, and it wasn't available in fifth grade it wasn't available in that school until sixth grade, but I started playing drum set that summer that we moved. That was kind of like how my parents were like, I know you're super bummed that we're moving, but we got you and your brother this drum set. And my brother was, almost 5 years older than me. And it was for both of us, but it was from his godfather. It was kind of for him. But we both started playing. We just like put on a like fucking Aerosmith record and started playing. And then I played in the band in school. I did that all through middle school and high school. That was, you know, a huge part of my life. I was total band nerd. My only redeeming quality was that I was a drummer and I wasn't like a fucking tuba player. Nothing against tuba players. Sorry, Corey. Cody. Cody Henry. Corey Henry. Corey Henry doesn't care about tuba players. I was like 9 or 10 when I started on drum set, and I kind of taught myself and then was like always playing snare drum and stuff in the band at school. So
yeah.
I kind of had, like, was self-taught, but was also like learning to read like standard notation and stuff. And I was supposed to be playing bells and xylophone, and I totally did not practice that shit like I should have, and I regret it now. I have a xylophone in the studio. I walk by it every day, and I look at it, and I think, one day I will conquer you. And I went to SIU Edwardsville from high school for a couple of years and studied jazz, and like I mentioned off mic, I smoked, drank, and fucked a scholarship away. And it was fun. I didn't do anything in high school, and then I got to college and was like far enough away from home. My parents were like 45 minutes away, where I could like screw around and do stupid shit, but there was a safety net close by, and my sister lived in Illinois as well, so I could go over there and get a hot meal. But you know, I started smoking and drinking and fucking smoking weed and chasing girls and doing stupid shit and just getting distracted, and ended up losing scholarship and had to leave after a couple years, which I later went back at like 27 to finish that degree. But in between there, I started teaching drum lessons at a music store and met Jim Mano, like we talked about, like literally the first day he stuck his head in the drum studio and was like, "Hey, do you want to audition for my swing band and we play covers and shit?" And I was like, "Okay." And then the bass player in that band was a guy named Steve Stecker, and Steve and I, he asked me to join his original band called Core Project, and we played around St. Louis for a few years, and that was a whole other sort of fiasco. We toured and we did okay. I mean, we played the pageant once or twice, and
yeah, there was a lot of big names there now, like that came out of Core Project, right? A lot of good players.
Yeah, that band was all good players. Yeah. I don't know. Dave Grelly was in the band. Nathan Hershey was the first keyboard player, and then he left, and Dave Grelly came in. But besides me, Dave, and Nate, the guitar player lives in Colorado, and I know like he plays at his church and stuff.
Yeah.
Matthias and the Pirates was part of the second wave. He was in Jive Turkey. They were kind of like our big brother band. So we came up under them, playing shows with them, and then after they sort of dissolved, they became Art Thugs, and I'm trying to remember the timing of that. That was a long ass time ago, right, Shane. But he came in when Steve left the band, and he was one of the MCs. And then he went on to do Earthworms with Justin from Core Project. And then after that, I was in the first iteration of The Feed with Dave and Ben Reese. And then I left, and Kevin took over. But yeah, at that point it was kind of like I was gigging around town a little bit, and I decided to go back to school after some time, and I went back to Edwardsville, and I did the jazz performance program, honestly not because I love jazz so much, but because I didn't really want to do the concert performance and play, like, you know, orchestral percussion. It's not really my thing. But the one thing that school does for you is it kind of plugs you into a network. So I kind of immediately, you know, got back into a network of players and started freelancing more. And then I guess I went right after I'd gone back to school, I was there for maybe a semester. I started working full time for Steve Ewing. That brings us up to about 6 years ago. That's good enough, right?
Doing like his solo records?
Yeah, I played on one of his solo records. I played on Common Side Effects with him and Adam Hansborough and Nick Jost. And Nick is now in a big touring band called Baroness, like a heavy rock band, super badass. He's doing really well. He's a St. Louis cat. And then I guess around that is probably when I met Jim Peters, and I played with Jim and Javier Mendoza's band here and there. I never played on one of his whole records. I played on like a Christmas record and a couple songs here and there. He always had used a rotation of players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, various blues acts, Mike Aguirre, and then I was one of the Deep Fried Two, Matt Hill and the Deep Fried Two, when Joe Meyer left town to tour with who was that? John Nemeth. Is that right? Yeah. He went out with John Nemeth, and I took over with Matt Hill's band, and that was kind of when I met Mike and a lot of those guys.
Now that you say that, I'm pretty sure that's probably where it was.
That we met?
At least, seen you play and things, mm-hmm. That I can recall, because I used to go to a couple of those Matt Hill shows, and then that's where I met Paul Niehaus.
Yeah.
And who's become a good friend now, too. And
Paul's a good dude.
Yeah.
I enjoyed playing with him a lot.
But yeah, that's probably, it's kind of, I knew Joe also mm-hmm. did that, so.
Yeah.
I'm betting there was somewhere in there was when I first started watching you play. And
Probably. So. Playing with Matt, and then I did the jam session at the Beale on Broadway every Monday. That was another thing that Joe did when he split with Nemeth. I started doing that with the Hardtail Blues Band, Matt Lauder and Brian Massey, and one point Paul Bond was still in the band then, and then he left, and we started doing it. We did some with Mike for like a summer. That was super fun.
We covered a lot there with from hip hop, rock,
right.
blues. Do you have any particular favorites?
I fucking hate that question.
I
don't hate that question, yeah. But it's just a hard question to answer because it's more of a mood thing. I like
sure.
I definitely like to play more rock and stuff, but I also like I play with a bunch of like this fall, other than like the weekend that I played Lou Fest, and like one other weekend that I had something, maybe one or two that I had some other shows. Dude, I was weddings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like filling in with some wedding bands during the busy season where they have like more than one version of the same band out on the same night. So, and honestly, there's some bullshit that goes along with that work that I don't love. You know, it's like, do I love fucking playing Brown Eyed Girl? Not exactly, but at the same time, like somebody's giving me money to
sure.
fucking play drums. Like that's you know, like I just have to kind of always remind myself to always be grateful for that.
Yeah.
But I'm playing dance music all night, and I like playing dance music. I like just laying it down and keeping it steady and people having a good time. And
yeah.
It can be really gratifying when people dance. I know if I'm like not paying attention for a second, it's like I feel like I can see it in how people dance. If me and the bass player aren't agreeing, then
sure.
I feel like that can be reflected, but it's sometimes I really enjoy just making a room full of people move. It's fun, you know. I play church gigs every Sunday morning,
yeah.
And sort of my policy with the church gigs, because there I'm there in a professional capacity, is that I am not there to talk about religion. So, but I'm still happy to be there, and someone's getting something out of it. And no matter what anyone else believes, if me playing drums and like letting those people connect with that music keeps them from going out in the world and being an asshole for another week, then I'm happy to be a part of it.
Sure.
And also they pay me, which is not bad either. You right. know what I mean? I'm not being callous. Like, that's just...
That's something new I've learned, that there's a lot of... I'm not involved in a lot of churches, but I just always kind of thought that the band was a lot of people that, like, were already...
Volunteers.
Yeah. And then, like, but learning...
Most of the time, I'm playing with volunteer
right.
musicians, where it's, like, myself and the music director are the only ones that are there in a professional capacity. But
I've met a couple of friends doing the show, and they're like, "Yeah, we, you know, have a regular Sunday gig at the church." And
yeah, man. I mean, it's again, I enjoy doing that work. I enjoy like doing it every single Sunday?
Right.
Man, sometimes it's rough. You know, what yeah. I mean, if I do a Beale gig or an Oyster Bar gig, and I'm playing till 2, and I don't get until 3 or 3:30,
sure.
It's rough. Or like this past Saturday, I played a wedding in Kansas City with a band, and we got back in the van and chugged back to St. Louis. I got home at 5, and I had to be in Chesterfield at 7:15. It was rough.
Yeah.
But this is what I've chosen to do for a living.
Right.
My wife, until recently, I won't say that she doesn't work, because she takes care of our kids. They're 4 and 6. That's a serious fucking job.
Sure.
but she doesn't have much income from that. She watches her niece a couple days a week, and that's good for a few $100 a month, and that, I don't scoff at it. It's definitely helpful, but I kind of have to do the weddings and fill up with church gigs and stuff, because this is what I've chosen, and
yeah.
We gotta feed the babies, so...
Totally get them, man.
You know, the lessons are... Over the last several years, it's shifted from being more kind of half-and-half gigs and lessons to now the lessons have taken over a larger portion of my income. So I am able to, like, actually take some Friday nights off to either go see a show or not go play a show, or take a Saturday off to go play a show that maybe I'm not going to make that much money, but I'm going to be playing with friends. I'm going to be playing music that I love, that I've been able to pour some of my energy into. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to have to deal with playing a wedding or
right.
That sort of thing. So the lessons are sort of the big thing now, but I still have to do those. I can't afford not to do those other things.
Right.
So I just, you know, and it's easy to get jaded when you're like, all right, number 18 wedding for the year, you know, like, you know, pretty much know what it's going to be like. It's funny when you talk to other musicians that do those gigs. Be like, remember that wedding we did? It's like, nope.
Right.
Well, I didn't tell you which wedding. No, I just don't remember any of them. Like, I mean, no offense if I've ever played anyone's listening's wedding, but they all sort of run together. Sometimes it's hard to remember. Usually, if you remember, it's because something really shitty happened.
Yeah,
like somebody fucking played my drums on a set break without asking. That shit has happened.
Yeah. I don't know, man. And they all seem like everybody's got muscatoli, it seems like, and there's all, you know, that kind of, always,
man,
like,
weddings are, the wedding industry is a really interesting thing to be a part of in any capacity, and just to kind of sit back and watch, which is literally what I do. Like, I just sit back.
Yeah.
I'm literally sitting with my back against the wall where I can see the whole room every time I play a wedding. So I can, like, kind of watch all of this behavior unfold. And it's gone from, in years past, from it being like the bride and maybe the groom, but mostly the bride and her mom, like acting kind of entitled, to like acting really entitled, to like the whole wedding party acts super entitled now. And, you know, that's when shit gets ugly. That's when
right.
People's worst versions of themselves. Come on, you know, you add alcohol and this level, you're at a wedding, so it's all family and friends. There's this level of familiarity where people just let the shit go.
Right.
And it's, I, you know, again, if people are having a good time and people are being respectful, I do remember those. But if it's, you know, again, when somebody gets up and plays
sure.
my drums, my brand new Ludwigs that I just, nicest instrument I ever bought, and I'm walking back in. I step off the elevator on a set break. I went outside with one of the singers, and I come back in, and I, like, look at her. I was like, why does the break music sound funny? And I go, she was like, I hear drums. Motherfucker. And I come around the corner, and the bride's brother is playing my drums. I'm like, ah! Which, you know, the most fucked up thing, if he had asked, I would have totally let him.
Right.
But he didn't ask, and that sucks. So it's just that type of thing. But, like,
right.
You know... But the wedding I played this last week, like, I don't... Those people were definitely not in anywhere near my tax bracket. But they were nice, and they were, you know... But
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to do that work over and over again. But it's, you know, but again, I'm getting paid. I'm fucking played. Getting paid to play drums. So.
Yeah. Is there a lot to, I see you have two kits here and stuff. But
there's actually a third one hiding over there. It's like a junior kit for like my little guys and gals.
But, you know, like we're saying, you know, kind of playing a lot of the different things. But, I mean, is there a lot to different kits for you at all? Like, I mean, like you said Ludwig.
I have one kit. My teaching kits stay here. When I started teaching on my own, there's a whole other story. I knew that I had to have two kits. I was teaching at Drum Headquarters in Maplewood. Do you remember Drum Headquarters? And there was one in St. Charles too. That place had been open for 30 years, and after 30 years they closed their doors, which sucked, just because it was an institution. In a very personal business sense, it worked out for me because I'm able to do it on my own. And it benefits me more, just obviously because I'm not paying rent or anything and I'm able to charge what I want to charge. but it was kind of an institution. Like, I grew up going there. I would, you know, my dad would bring me in from St. Peter's to go to the store in Maplewood, and I'd hear like the older guys, the like pro dudes talking and probably hearing like super inappropriate shit that I didn't need to hear. but I was teaching there when it closed in 2011, and I brought 20 students with me from that. I don't know if I'd be able to do this on my own if I hadn't brought 20 students with me. It's difficult to find that the clientele. It's a very slow burn. It takes some time. So, and at one point I would think I was down to like 9 paying students or 10 paying students. There was like a little bit of a scary time there, but I, you know, have been able to build it up, and now I've been able to keep it going for 5 years. But I have to have two kits that are separate from my kit that I play out on, because if I have to set it up and tear it down Monday afternoon, you're like, it's going to sit there. I'm not going to go down there until 15 minutes before my first lesson and try and set a kit up. Like, it would just be a recipe for disaster. I have to have. So these kits stay stationary. I take cymbals off. The red one is in the middle is the one that I play. And I take cymbals off of that one every once in a while. But when you came in, you walk past a shelf in the dark corner there that's got my Ludwigs on it. Okay. And I bought that kit a couple years ago. Fred Pierce had it, ordered it from the factory for me. I wanted specific sizes. And I've added 2 drums to it since I bought it over the course of 3 years. So if I'm, depending on what I'm playing, I have 2 different bass drums for the kit that are different sizes. And then I have like 2 different floor toms that are different sizes. So I can make different configurations out of it. I can almost make 2 whole kits out of it. But that's the one that I gig on and record on, and it's kind of my baby.
Yeah.
But these are the drums that I play the most. I teach, you know, 32 lessons a week. So it's important to have. I've even, like I said, gotten to the point where like I don't even have to take cymbals or anything off of them. I have a pair of sticks there, so I can just walk in and sit down and play. And I thought that would be better for my practicing, but turns out, like, having 2 kids and being an adult makes it, like, super fucking impossible to practice as much as you... At least you feel like you need to.
STLDrumLab.com.
Facebook.com/STLDrumLab. Right now, it's just me in my basement. If you go to the website, the studio does look slightly different on the website, because we actually moved a year ago. This is much bigger now. I was able to add the third kit for the junior, and now I have this little furniture set that we're sitting on here. I didn't have that in the old studio. It was just kind of a 14 by 14 square. But eventually I'd like to, you know, get a storefront, get it out of my house. I have no desire to do retail, but to, you know, offer drum lessons and be able to hire some other teachers and get some other people involved and do some bigger things in the community, educationally and otherwise. So it's something I'd like to do, but it's hard to pull the trigger on that because I have very little overhead here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I've got my computer and all my recording stuff and the extra monitor and a speaker and stuff, but man, that's not bringing my electric bill up
right
as much as renting
sure
a place. Yeah. So, but yeah, you can go to the website and check that out. I'm pretty proud of the business that I've been kind of building here, and this last year has been great. I'm actually on a wait list. I have like two or three families waiting to get themselves or their kids in.
Yeah, that's gotta feel good
for drum lessons. Yeah, it feels good. I don't trust it at all. I'm like, oh man, those people aren't gonna be there when it. But what it turns out that people do drop off of the waiting list, but other people come along. So I'm jam packed right now. It's difficult because the prime time is sort of like 4 and later because I'm teaching a lot of school age kids.
Right.
So there's only so many hours available Monday through Friday, and I do teach on Fridays, but I try not to carry a full boat just so I can either A, have like some family time on a Friday night, or if I have a gig, then it won't interfere with that too much. But fortunately I have about 10 adult students too, so that I'm able to kind of backfill my schedule earlier or front load my schedule, I guess, as it were, like, you know, kind of start before that school age prime time. And I've got a couple of homeschool kids, so they can come whenever. Yeah, I've had, you know, retired people and all kinds of stuff. So,
yeah, I guess never too late to start.
Yeah, man. My oldest student is 66. She's been with me for several years. She is a big part of the reason. She's a big reason that I have the studio here. She was very helpful from the jump. She was with me when Drum Headquarters closed, and she was very encouraging 5 years ago when that shit went down. Because she was actually living in Maplewood, and we weren't supposed to tell anybody yet, and then as soon as we could tell people, I called her first because she lived in Maplewood. I didn't want her to drive by the store and like see the sign and then call me like, what the fuck, you know? So I called her first, and I was kind of still reeling, like, what am I gonna do? And she was like, you're gonna get your shit together and you're gonna find some drum sets and you're gonna, you know, teach out of your house. And I was like, okay, you know. And she's been super helpful in other ways. She's 66, she's not retired, she's a savvy lady. She still works full time and she still comes and sees me, and you know, that shit is super rewarding, to like build relationships with people. And that it just starts with like, I like the drums. Like, I like the drums too. And cool, let's, you know, let's come hang out.
Nice. Yeah.
I'll teach you what I know. So yeah, but I've people as young as 5, I get inquiries for like, can you teach my 3-year-old? I'm like, oh man, you can bring your 3-year-old over, but we'll like play some, sing some songs and bang on a drum. But sure.
I work at the, still employed there for the YMCA, mm-hmm. and they have these like, youth sports, mm-hmm. And they have like these rookies classes for like 3 and 4 year olds and things. And I used to coach these like T-ball classes and things.
Right.
And it's, I mean, at least you're like more one-on-one. I was trying to teach like 8 kids how to play T-ball, and it is like insane, like trying to
get them. So my youngest students, I actually, that was kind of the other reason for the third kid, is my youngest students I actually do in pairs. I have, on Mondays, I have 2 first graders that are pretty new to the instrument that we meet together.
Right.
I switch from 30 to 45 minute lessons, but with that age group, I don't care how sweet or attentive I don't want your 5-year-old for 45 minutes alone, but 2 5-year-olds for 45 minutes, and then we can kind of play games and have fun and that sort of, they were sitting here playing these 2 cajones, and I was fucking playing acoustic guitar, singing Jingle Bells, and then just being, you know. But when it's one-on-one, it's like that, you know, Yeah, it's a lot more difficult. It's actually easy with the small kids in small groups, but like eight kids trying to teach them T-ball.
Yeah. Well, trying to get them to all run one direction.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And then, of course, at that point, parents are pretty much checked out. You know, they're looking at it like, okay, fine, they get 45 minutes to sit down. And I'm like, you know, and then like, you know, I'm trying to get them to help, like, you know, hey, just stand on second base and get them to turn to third, you know, or whatever. That
sure.
Kind of, and like, it's difficult to get any help and...
Yeah,
so anyway, it was fun. It's very rewarding in a sense because the kids love you and stuff. But it, you know, they're always happy to be a part of it. But it's like it is also like sometimes you want to pull your hair out and stuff.
Yeah, totally. My daughter is six. She'll be seven next month, and she is still that age where she still thinks we're cool, and her friends still like think adults are cool. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, this fucking guy again. It's like, I can go to my daughter's school on any given day of the week, and as long as I sign in the office, I can have lunch with my kid in the cafeteria. And I do that every once in a while. And it's like I walk in, and all the little first graders there, I don't even, you know, like, kids don't even know. They're like, hi. And I'm like, hey. And they're like, oh, you know, like, and all her friends are like, Mr. Bombada. I'm like, you know, it's awesome. And in a couple of years I'm gonna be like, oh god, fucking dad's here again, like such a dork. So yeah, sure. At that age they're still, you know, they still kind of like adults and they don't think that we're lame. So
you said she's your daughter's taking lessons from Mark.
She is taking violin lessons from Mark. She is totally, my fucking kid is the one that doesn't practice. I don't believe in like forcing kids to practice an instrument. It's like kind of like forcing them to read. Like we encourage her to read. I encourage her to practice. I want her to love reading. I want her to be a lifelong reader. I am not a reader.
Yeah.
I immediately regret saying that while this is being recorded, but because it sounds like such a terrible thing, but I am like, I don't like sit down and read books, but like, I wish that I did. I wish that I had been better about, you know, just doing that as a kid. Because when I do it, I enjoy it, but I'm just not, it's just not a part of my life. But she loves it, and I want to encourage that, and I want it to always be that way. And the same thing with an instrument. I want her to love to play the violin. We got a piano a couple months ago. We found a free piano on Craigslist, and she plays that thing all the time. So we're going to be either adding or replacing violin lessons. Sorry, Mark, I don't know. And actually, this is someone that you should get in touch with that is a part of the music scene in a slightly different way. You know Jesse Gannon? Jesse Gannon and the Truth? The local, like, soul kind of pop band.
I don't believe it.
And he plays in Superhero Killer with Donna Williams and some of those guys. His... better half Marshney opened a piano studio on South Kings Highway, and she is like doing it right. She's doing group lessons, and so I think Ella's probably going to go do some lessons with her. But she has an interesting role in the music scene where she's not a player you're seeing out all the time, but there's going to be in 10, 15 years, there's going to be players on the scene that are going to be have come from her.
Yeah.
Tutelage. I hope that some of my kids, but I, you know, I look at my kids sometimes and I'm like, geez, do you ever fucking practice? And they're like, no, we don't practice.
Yeah.
Okay. But so, yeah, my daughter will probably be doing piano lessons here soon. And my son, I don't know.
He's playing some trumpet or something?
Yeah, you know, I leave everything available to them. They can come down here and play anything. My daughter, I have a Fender Rhodes piano plugged into a guitar amp. She knows how to come down and turn the amp on, and she'll play my Rhodes sometimes. Now she just plays the piano upstairs. They're allowed to play the drums or whatever they want. There's a bass down here. There's guitars down here. They're allowed to play whatever they want as long as they're not being destructive.
Yeah.
It's funny because people always ask me, like, whoa, can Ella play drums? And, like, probably. You know what I mean? I've never sat down and taught her, but that must have been before, that was before the last Ruby's gig. I was cleaning up down here, and I think I had the songs playing on my big speakers, and she was down here messing around, And then all of a sudden I hear my, it was one of the new Ruby songs, and it was, I was playing the voice memo from my phone, and all of a sudden, like, the drums and the voice memo that was playing through my speakers, like, got really real, and I turn around, and my daughter's, like, playing the kick snare pattern that I was playing in the song. So, like, she can play drums, but I, you know, if they want to play drums, they'll play. You know what I mean? It's kind of, it's hard teaching your own kids, you know what I mean, with her and the violin. I'm, like, the worst parent in the world.
Sure.
I'm the opposite. I'm, like, I do all the things that I tell my drum students' parents not to do. Like, I get frustrated. I'm, like, browbeat her. I'm like, you gotta practice. And then I just gave up eventually.
All right.
But Mark, when Mark and I pass, when he actually comes here for the lessons, as we're, like, passing, I'm, like, bringing a student in, and he's walking out from teaching my daughter a lesson. I'm like, how's she doing? He's like, she's fine. I'm like, that's great. She never practices. But yeah. She apparently really likes the theory side of it, which is good. I think it'll be, I think we probably have a piano player on our hands. She, that's the great thing about piano, is you can look down and sort of see the theory. It's not quite as abstract as with the violin.
Right.
It takes a little bit deeper understanding, I think. I don't know. So, I don't, she'll be better at piano than me, like, very, very soon. I have a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, it's exciting stuff.
Yeah.
I love that. I love just that this, like, you know, seeing young kids passionate about it and, like, you know, knowing the next generation coming up and stuff. And,
yeah.
Like, you know, I love seeing.
Oh, I mean, my kids are going to have real fucking jobs. Like, they're not going to be fucking musicians. We're like, we're, we can see the poverty line from where we're sitting. So they're going to have to do something. You know what? If one of my kids wanted to be a musician or artist of any kind, we would definitely nurture it. But my fear is that in the future that it just seems like art is being devalued, and, like, I don't know if they'll be able to make a living. You know what I mean? I just feel like the paradigm will eventually shift to where, you know, you have to have another job. They're like, it's not going to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard to be a full-time musician. You know what I mean? Like, my day job is teaching drum lessons, and it's definitely still, I'm still playing drums, but, you know, I wish I could live on just really cool gigs and recording sessions. But the reality is that, you know, I did about 6 really great recording sessions this year. And they were super rewarding, and they all paid what they needed to pay, but it's not by any means enough to live on.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And yeah. So,
if something like, say, Sleepy Ruby's hits and they go on the road and stuff, is that something? I mean,
I think that, you know, we I'd have to cross that bridge when I come to it.
Right.
I think that it would have to work for everybody. Everybody still has to live. I mean, everybody still has bills to pay.
Sure.
So with that said, I think that we would just figure it out.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that there's smart ways to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that there's smart ways to do it. And if it was a situation just where if it was a couple of weeks or something like that, I have an adult student that is a very proficient player. That I've actually gotten a couple of gigs and has taught in the past, that I would be very comfortable with telling, you know, all my students and their parents, like, this dude's going to take over for a couple of weeks. He's going to be your substitute, and he'll do, you know what I mean? They're like, so that there's not any kind of stopgap in lessons. And obviously I'd have to pay him, but, I would just do what I had to do to, there's always a little bit of, if you're going to do the thing that you really love to do, and it sucks that it is this way, is like sometimes you're going to maybe not lose money, but maybe just not make as much money as you would if you were doing your regular thing. And that's okay.
Sure.
I mean, I've passed on gigs recently and turned gigs down just because I was like, yeah, I mean, I could use that money, but I just don't really see myself being very happy. There were a couple of things that were long-term, and something that I had sort of been doing a little bit more, that I've been doing for a while. that I was just like, yeah, it's just time to give that thing up. Because when I had to do it, I fucking hated it.
Yeah.
I hated it. So I, you know, just finding that balance. It's, again, so I lean more on my business with the lessons, and anytime I can make money more during the day is a plus, because then I can do the gigs that I really want to do. I haven't had to turn down a Ruby's gig yet, you know what I mean? Because sure. I've got everything else is going kind of in the direction well enough. You know, again, if it's going to come down to a difference of $100, like, I'm going to make this much, or I'm going to make that much plus $100 to go do the other thing, but I can't do the show with the Rubies. Like, yeah, that's fine. I'm cool. You know?
Right.
I'm not there necessarily to make money. If we play a show to 200 people, like, yeah, I'd like to make something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
All right.
But not just because I need to make something. I think that that band has value that, you know,
definitely.
We should be making a little bit of money. It's a high. I think it's a high quality product, and it's not just me. It's not because I have my hands in it. Sure. I'm just happy to be along for the ride. Same thing with John's band.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's something came up. John's a savvy dude, smart guy. He's not gonna. He's got a little one of his own, and
I don't. I don't get where people think that, you know, music should be free and all the time, like, and yeah, all this. Like, I, you know, again, working, I've said before, but working at Oyster Bar and things, like, I tell people there's a, you know, $5 cover or whatever, $10 cover, and they, like, they scoff, and they're like, what?
Yeah, and they, like, it's like, how much did you just fucking play for a beer at the stadium?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, when we were doing, like, the Monday nights at Beale or any Beale gig, Beale on Broadway, it was like, people would be coming from the stadium. They just paid $9 for a beer.
Right.
Pay a $5 cover. They're standing there going like, oh, jamming to the band. Like, this is great. And they go, how much is it? $5. You're like, whoa. Yeah. Like, oh.
Right. Just paid $30 to park.
Man, and I see it. I see it with my students. It scares the life out of me.
Right.
Like, I was talking to a kid, and he's like, well, I just get on YouTube. And I'm like, eventually you're going to have to pay for music. And he just was like, why? He just could not understand, and I was like, man, that person needs to get paid. Well, we pay for Spotify. I'm like, oh, man, you're not getting it. I use Spotify. I'm not going to act like I don't, but I try and use it like a resource. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
My approach, my uses for music are going to be different. So Spotify, for me, is a resource, but if I... what was that last year when Jason Isbell's album came out? Oh my God, I wore that thing out on Spotify.
Yeah,
but I turned around and bought it too because I played that shit so much. I was like, I have to buy this. I have to pay for this.
Right.
You know what I mean? I want to pay for it. I want him to get paid. I went to a show recently with a friend, a non-musician. Which, for all your musician listeners, if you don't have any non-musician friends, I suggest go find one, because that's been a recent development in my life that has been just fantastic. I mean, I love all my musician friends, but, you know, it's like your family. Sometimes you need to be away from your family.
Right.
And we went to a show at the Pageant. We went to see Lettuce. Are you familiar?
Yeah. Actually, I've been using... now I'm blanking on the title. But I've been using a Lettuce song in my intro for my... for the plugs and stuff, so.
Oh, I might have caught that, actually.
It's just recently, I forget, man, I don't know.
Yeah, so I went to see them, and he had never heard of them, but I was like, man, let's go see this show, they're in town, let's go. And then at the end of the night, I went over to the merch table, and I was like, he was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm going to get a shirt. And he was like, what do you need a shirt? 36 years old, you need a Lettuce shirt. And I go... Because this is going to go right on the bus.
Yeah.
This money is going to go right on the bus. And there's the biggest margin of what they paid for versus what they're asking for this piece of merchandise. They make the most money off of this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and I mean, I'll buy their shit on iTunes, and that's cool, and, you know, whatever. But, like, these guys need to get paid. And he was like, oh, oh, and he goes and sees like DJs and shit. He's into like EDM stuff. I'm like, just, you know, when you go see people that are out there plying their wares, trying to sell their art, like, go to the merch booth and spend some money.
Definitely, yeah.
You know what I mean? If you can ever buy it out of the artist's hands, that's the best way to do it.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, I love buying stuff, especially even just to get your CD signed and stuff. I still love all that kind of, you know.
Right.
Being a fan, so. But I try to buy as much as I can, and even buying on vinyl when I can, too. So it's still a lot of fun for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, we'll wrap this thing up. We're going to drop in some tunes.
Cool.
We mentioned Tony playing with Sleepy Rubies. We're going to play, which one do you decide?
You can play A Good Something or Great Big Love. Yeah. Either one of those. Like I said, that was a super fun album to do, and the drums are really minimal. There's even a song that I think I played something and it didn't actually make the final mix just because it didn't need it. Yeah. I mean, I don't care. I'm just not poured my heart into that, Emily. Yeah. What the fuck? No. So it's really minimal, but like A Good Something I probably play the most. Like I'm doing kind of like a brush thing, but it's still pretty stripped down. And then Great Big Love, we went for like a big drum sound, but it's really sparse. But like on the bridge, it gets kind of intense and it's fun.
And then did you pick one from John?
Oh man, John's album. There's a lot of good songs on there. I mean, I don't know. Just pick your right. your favorite one. Or yeah. One sounds especially. I hope one doesn't sound especially drummy, because I don't want it. You know, I'm trying. I just want the songs to sound good. But I guess if one sounds particularly drummy, I guess The Professional is. That was a fun one. I remember that was a lot of fun to track that one. So,
okay.
I think that whole record's got good personality and good attitude. Yeah. So just pick one that you
great record
you like.
Yeah, and then Sleepy Ruby's the 29th of December at mm-hmm. Off Broadway.
Yep.
John Henry 4th at Off Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
December 21st, come out to Oyster Bar and see Tony making his Voodoo Players debut.
Yeah,
playing some Zeppelin tunes.
Some Zeppelin.
Yeah. And that's going to be a lot of fun. Emily Wallace and Carrie Liston vocals.
Yes.
Which ought to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Doing some Robert Plant.
Oh, man.
That's going to be killing. Yeah, it's going to be a good night. I'm excited to see it all come to life.
Yeah.
And if you don't have New Year's Eve plans.
Yeah, New Year's Eve. My cover band, Slam, we do hip-hop and R&B covers from, like, mostly the 90s, but... some like early 2000s and some recent stuff are doing a New Year's Eve party at Moulin Vin de Set there just off of Lafayette Square. It's like an all-inclusive deal. I think it's $80 a ticket, and that includes booze and like heavy appetizers, not like a sit-down dinner or anything, but they have several rooms. I think they'll have a DJ in one room, they have like a game room, and then my band Slam will be playing there, and actually we're the night before December 30th we're at the Train Wreck in Westport. I've that band, we don't play but kind of once a month and do some private gigs here and there, but it's one that I started with some friends like 8 years ago, and it's obnoxious but it's fun.
Sure.
So I don't, you know, it's kind of hard to like totally dissolve it and get rid of it. So we do this big New Year's thing every year at Mulan. It was super fun. So yeah, if you don't have plans for that, that's an option too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then check out stldrumlab.com on
stldrumlab.com.
And then, on Facebook as well. So
mm-hmm.
Get involved. Tony's up to a lot of stuff, man. It's very cool, man. I appreciate you taking some time.
Yeah, man. I appreciate the offer. It was super fun.
Yeah.
It was an honor to be a part of the Rock Paper Podcast.
Yeah, man. Everybody's doing it, so.
Yeah.
No, it's...
Well, now I feel less special. Fuck, this is a sad note to end on. This shit just got weird. Just turn it off.
Yeah. All right. Let me hit start. Here we go. No, man. I'm serious. It means a lot. It's really... this was a lot of fun getting to hang, and I'm thrilled that people want to do this still. Like, it's crazy. I never thought that when I started this in my buddy's basement that I'd still be doing it 300 episodes later.
Yeah.
And you know, having some of the best talent in town want to be on the show. So
yeah, it's awesome.
It feels good. So, but yeah, anyway, thank you. And
yeah,
we'll see you soon.
Yeah, right on.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Rock Paper Podcast.
Well, yeah, that was it.